And the weather today, highs of 0 degrees centigrade, that's zero to you, madam, minus 2 degrees centigrade is the low, very cold and generally cloudy with mist and fog patches.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
The strange thing is, actually, that weather forecast, generally cloudy with mist and fog patches, is an excellent description of Sunderland in June. Isn't that right, Kayleigh?
Certainly is, without a doubt.
Exactly. We in the northeast know that, you know, this kind of concern about weather and 0 degrees centigrade. No. Just go on for a walk on Rooka Piepet and all will be fine. That's the key thing. It's marvellous. Already in the programme, Kayleigh, we have spoken of your good self. And indeed, I have shown to both Holly McGrattan, Level 2 Media Production student, and Ben Lewis, Level 2 Public Relations student, both from Brighton, the excitement of your good self standing with Richard Berry outside Spark FM studios, actually at the University of Sunderland. And Ben is still recovering, I think it's fair to say.
Just about, yeah.
Exactly. He will even recover more when I open up his microphone channel, which is always very good.
Would help, yeah. I'm talking to myself.
just chat very loudly. Yeah. But it has to be said, clearly, having discussed at length the excitement of Lincoln City playing Brighton in the FA Cup on Saturday, the excitement of the Newcastle United, obviously, away to Oxford, Manchester City away to Crystal Palace. And I'm thinking, well, obviously, Kayleigh, her father, passionate supporter of Sunderland. And obviously, they're no longer in the FA Cup, actually. They were knocked out in the third round. And then I think, well, it's OK, concentrate on the lead, on the league, because obviously they're doing very well there, Kayleigh. And I say, oh, Sunderland 1, Stoke City 3. And Sunderland,
oh, dear me.
Very, very, very strong, because if we look at the league table, of course, Sunderland are supporting 19 other clubs, which is very good. As you can see there, Holly, from the point of view, you see where Sunderland are proudly positioned in terms of the Premier League table. Needless to say, Kayleigh, when we last spoke about this, we tried to reach you. And in fact, the response was Kayleigh had to go to hospital to support a very good friend. I thought it was an excuse.
Yeah, it was very unexpected.
It was very unexpected. I thought, you know, you've got to let it go. You've got to let it go. I mean, you know, every year we have this discussion and debate with your good self, Kayleigh, and your dad decides, is he going to buy a season ticket? Is he not? What is the situation of the Carr household at present? Is it a case of you've given up, or is it just a case of, well, best to actually just start supporting Newcastle?
Oh, dear, no. No, I think my dad's kind of give up, though. He hasn't gone for the season ticket this year.
No.
Yeah, I used to follow it a lot when I was younger as well. Obviously, used to go to the matches all the time with your dad, but lately I just... There's no point, is there?
There's no point. So, you see, that is an image of a fine graduate in multi-platform journalism from the University of Teesside that David Moyes has alienated. I just raised that for each thing. So you see there, Ben, that's the kind of the sort of strange. But Ben, would you like to ask Kayleigh what she's actually doing? And also, perhaps you'd ask her to promote her blog and exciting sort of scenarios that she usually writes about on a regular basis.
Katie, yeah, tell us more about your blogging and what you've been getting up to lately.
Yeah, of course. Basically, work lately. That's all I seem to do. Currently working in a contact centre. Not really where I expected to be, in all honesty, after uni.
Kayleigh, if you'd only gone to the University of Lincoln, but no, you went to the University of Teesside. What can I say? You know? I know it's brave. It's very brave for a lass from Sunderland to actually go 18 miles down the A19 to, you know, Middlesbrough. But you know, you should have made it 142 miles. You would have been in Lincoln. There you are.
Sort of. I should have. I know. So. I'm working on my CV a lot lately, though. I'm hoping to get something new this year. This is my year to get a goal, like get something new, something different. And my blog, it's basically like a diary of events for myself. Just write anything in there, from fashion, what I get up to. And the website for it, if you want to check it out, it is unravelapprettypuzzle.wordpress.com.
unravelapprettypuzzle.wordpress.com. Go to your website. Will we be getting a name check in there this week, Kayleigh?
Oh, you certainly will, as good. Always.
So, sometimes you actually read them and you think, I'm moved. You know, when Kaylee described her first experience of being very nervous at the other end of the telephone, you know, all these very sophisticated students that come from places as far afield as Brighton, you know, it's very exotic for people to actually deal with that. Suddenly, because as we know, Kaylee, you know, we like to provide the impression that these southerners are kind of experiencing civilization for the first time when they cross the Watford Gap border and actually head north. So, you know, it's quite a journey for Holly, as we found out last week, to actually make it to Lincoln, really. I mean, you know, just actually being here itself.
It's a commitment.
Quite a way away. And Ben, of course, you decided, well, Lincoln was calling you, really.
Basically, yes. It's rather cold up here.
Kaylee, we've been talking about the wonders of the world. You should try Sunderland.
In the summer or now?
Now I would have thought actually. Well, I do know. Because, Kaylee, there isn't in Sunderland the kind of response that they have in Newcastle, where it's almost a kind of matter of honour to go out on the big market when it's minus 15 degrees with a miniskirt and effectively very little else on, really.
Pleasant up here today, I must say.
Exactly.
I don't really want to go out.
I suspect there might be another call coming through from another sort of person, or maybe it's just somebody who actually wants to sell advertising to us. I don't know. Ben's taken that call, you know, and he's, do you see that professionalism there, Holly? Left the studio as well, so he didn't talk on air with whoever might be sort of coming through and calling me. It's very good, very impressive from that point of view. Anyway, the point being, have you ever, Kaylee, been to the Great Wall of China?
I haven't, no. I haven't.
Taj Mahal in India?
No, never.
Statue of Liberty in New York?
Oh, no, but it is a dream. That's one place I really want to go.
All right. So actually, you're not alone. 91% of those surveyed have never been to the Taj Mahal. 90% have never been on the Great Wall of China. And 82% have never seen the Statue of Liberty in New York. Was that some sort of advertising sales pitch?
No, it's a guy I want to speak to you in the next few minutes. That's okay.
Oh, right. Well,
didn't pronounce your name right.
How extraordinary. You know, it's amazing. Sometimes you think you're in the communications industry, but still,
yes,
never mind.
Indeed, funny.
Yeah, whole new world. Right, Kaylee, any questions you'd like to put to Holly, who's actually just clocking up her fourth show, actually? She did two last week. And now she's she'll have to leave in about 15 minutes because she goes off for a half an hour thing. So would you like to ask Holly, you know, what it's like doing media? Is it media production you're doing, Holly?
Yeah, media production.
At the University of Lincoln?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. How's life in Lincoln in comparison to, like, back home? Is it much different? Do you like it?
It's so different, and I think that is why I like it. I haven't found anywhere quite like Brighton, but I wanted to come up very far away, maybe Midlands. I call it North, but apparently it's still the Midlands. I like it.
I am the same.
Holly, I'm afraid to say that Lincoln is by no means the North.
It's basically on the border of Yorkshire. I think it will do.
There's serious sort of lines here. You know, we don't in Sunderland, Newcastle, or Middlesbrough refer to people as duck, for instance. All right, duck. You know, I don't know why. When I first came to Lincoln, I thought, what? Is somebody shooting at me? You know, please. Please.
I didn't know what to make of it when I first heard.
Being
duck zoned.
So, different line on that particular perspective. But as ever, you know, incisive nature comes across. That's important. Kaylee, when are you going to get back to Lincoln? Because you haven't been here for a few years. So when are we going to be next blessed by KC and her Sunshine Band?
Oh, fingers crossed, it's definitely sometime soon. New Year and all that thing, yeah. I'm hoping to come back down very soon.
She actually passed the driving test as well last year. Yeah. So.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you. Over the moon.
Yep. On the case, you see, and that's why David Moyes should clearly take records and lessons in success from the Kaylee Carr household. He should actually be brought in to speak to Victor Anichebe and other players for Sunderland, who, of course, clearly need some inspiration to actually help them across a very challenging time. Or maybe they just want to take some time out in the Championship. And if they actually continue going down, they could maybe sort of cross over with Lincoln City as they kind of arise.
Or Wigan, or...
Exactly.
The rest of them down there.
All the greats.
Or Blackpool, I don't know.
Exactly.
We'll talk about Blackpool
all
again.
The greats are there. Holly is now going to actually, in her own unique and inimitable style, ask those final two interrogatives. You remember the time that you were first sort of put in terms of that in the studio, in our northern studio, and there was a look of sheer terror that crossed Kaylee Carr's face as she said, I haven't got a clue.
It certainly did,
what words to actually sort of use to ask these questions at all? Well, Holly has kind of given it her own unique spin, which I know she's going to deliver now with aplomb.
Have you enjoyed your chat with us this morning, Doug?
I could have always thought Holly
the most southern way of saying it.
It was a Lincolnshire native. You know, wrong. It really was.
Have you enjoyed it, Duck?
I'm amazed BBC Lincolnshire haven't signed you up already to actually become their authentic listener. Yeah, and viewer. Carry on. I think the answer is yes. Outrageous.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Who needs Gabriella Peralta and the sleepy dog called Frodo when you got Kaylee from Sunderland to actually add comedy value to the whole piece? And the next question.
And you said you might be visiting us, but will you be talking to us soon on the radio?
I hope so, yeah, definitely. I'd love to.
Normally what happens, you see, in most cases with guest co-presenters, I actually book them in advance, etc. Kaylee just says, I'm free then. Do you fancy doing a radio piece? What the heck?
I'm always so last minute, aren't I?
Yeah. Come on board. Come on down. So it would seem that our own little mini research that we've been doing on the programme so far has echoed those of the World Heritage Sites and the research from Wendy Wu Tours in terms of, have we been to the Taj Mahal? Have we been to the Great Wall of China? Have we seen the Statue of Liberty? To address points behind this and to talk about the UNESCO World Heritage List for a whole variety of things, we're delighted to welcome two fantastic individuals. First of all, the Chief of Asia and the Pacific World Heritage Centre, Mr. Feng Jing. Good morning, Mr. Jing. How are you?
Good morning.
Excellent. And ace travel expert, Lawrence Hicks. Good morning, Lawrence. How are you?
Morning from London.
Whoa, London to Lincoln. It's almost as though heritage site, and we've got Brighton's Ben in the studio as well. That's Ben from Brighton. So it's all wondrous stuff. Let's focus initially with your good self, Lawrence, in terms of this particular site, etc. The World Heritage Sites that are actually there, and why actually some of them, such as obviously the Great Barrier Reef and Machu Picchu, might well be seen as being under threat.
Well,
obviously they are under threat, and that is a very, very good reason for people to actually take that, bite the bullet and actually get out and see them before they actually disappear before our eyes. I think the doctor will give you a little bit more information on the science and the technical side of the of the erosion and the gradual disappearance of some of these sites. But it's interesting that within your particular region where you broadcast, that 44% of your people said that visiting a historical and cultural site was one of the most important factors when they're going on holiday. So people are actually turning to visiting these places before they eventually disappear.
Mm. Great Wall of China, of course, one of the myths. You can't actually see it from space, but it is phenomenal. Maybe actually Donald Trump is trying to make a wall that you can actually see from space, but I won't make any other political comments on this particular case. if we can come to Dr. Jing, in terms of the bounds of that, I mean, clearly we're approaching Chinese New Year celebrations and so on, and that's something where, you know, again, there is this sense of, well, we are on the same planet, and it's really important for us as human beings to express and actually see and celebrate these wonderful cultural artifacts. Dr. Jing, yeah. I mean, in terms of your sort of perspective for this, can you just share with us what advice would you actually give people who are actually, you know, looking to visit China?
Okay, I think that's a thank you for this. I'm very happy to get this on the eve of the Chinese New Year. There is a proverb said that the world is a book, and those who would not travel read only a page. So now I think through UNESCO perspective, we have the 1972 World Heritage Convention. Through this convention, there are sites of outstanding universal value being inscribed on the World Heritage List. The Great Barrier Reef and Machu Picchu we just mentioned is also amongst them. I think so far we have more than 1,052 sites on this World Heritage List, and China has around 50 sites, and for out of which I think the Great Wall is one of them. And this year also is the 30th anniversary for the celebration of the Great Wall being inscribed on the World Heritage List. I think this should be one of the best destinations for the Brits to visit China.
Ben, I think it's interesting to say also that you can, in fact, visit all of these World Heritage sites through a Wendy Wu tour. So either through its classic tours or its tailor-made. But they're all very easily accessible from the UK, and people are visiting them, and there are great opportunities for people to get out there and actually touch and feel these great heritage sites.
Ben, again, we've already spoken about your own sort of interest in terms of this. Questions for either Dr. Jing or indeed Lawrence.
Yes. As a general sort of overview of obviously the campaign, And what is your biggest worry for most of these sites? Do you feel like a lot of them could suffer as a result of climate change, or do you feel like some of them may be able to carry on with the current state that the climate will likely turn into?
Well, I think it's interesting to say that a lot of the income raised from tourism in these heritage sites, and particularly in China, is reinvested back into the heritage site itself. So, you know, for instance, if you go to Zhuyigong, in which is the nearest part of the wall to Beijing, you will see that there's been a lot of rebuilding and a lot of protection taking place of the wall in that area. So when you come off your tour bus and you actually get onto the wall, it's pretty safe, and a lot of it has been reestablished and reinforced. So it's actually prolonged its life. But there are other parts of the wall that you could also visit on the tours where you will see that they're not quite as preserved, but that's done particularly to try and show the wall in its original form. So you've got two distinct variations there.
And returning to, obviously, the upcoming Chinese New Year, the Year of the Rooster, it's also known as the Spring Festival in mainland China. In terms of that Chinese New Year celebration that's coming through, should we be looking forward with excitement, Dr. Jing, to what's happening? Do people make such as much a fuss of the Chinese New Year in China as, shall we do, as they do in Chinatown in London, for instance?
Yeah, in fact, I think in China, it's really the period of family reunion and also enjoyment. I think also a period of rest. I think that is particularly like a Christmas period in Europe or across Europe. So, I've been in Paris for almost 20 years. In recent years, there are also quite intensive celebrations in the downtown Paris. I think maybe a similar situation in London.
Mm. And, of course, San Francisco and other areas from that point of view. If people are looking to book a trip to China, because it can be quite ambitious to work through that, and we mentioned Wendy Wu Tours, should we actually make a beeline to the Wendy Wu Tours website? What's the best way forward, Lawrence?
Very much so. You should make a beeline to the Wendy Wu Tours website, www.wendywutours.co.uk. But the key thing when you're choosing your tour operator, your preferred tour operator, always book with an expert, somebody who understands and knows the destination well. I mean, we've had 20 years' experience of taking people into China, and so it's very important to pick the right tour operator with the right sort of expertise that can talk you through the particular type of tour that you want, the duration, the places you're going to visit, and when people call us, they get that full expertise, because all of our people who are answering the phones have all travelled to China numerous times. But I've got some interesting information on the rooster, if you'd like to hear about
Please,
it.
Please, absolutely.
And two key characteristics of the rooster is that they're very headstrong, first of all, and number two is that they like to be the centre of attention.
It's the American president. I'm sorry.
That's right. Well, it's me also. I'm a rooster.
Good heavens.
but apparently, in the year of your birth, it can be bad luck. The year of the rooster, if you're born within the year of the rooster, you can actually be faced with some bad luck. And the way to combat that is to wear red. So if you're wearing red, you'll be pretty safe.
Well, but sage words.
Unless you're
advice.
In Star Trek.
Very true. You're a Star Trek security officer. Who knows? Oh, you could be engineering. That's a different line entirely. Yeah. And finally, are there any places that you haven't visited yourself that you would like to? I mean, we talked about some of these areas, the Taj Mahal, Statue of Liberty. I mean, Lawrence, is there any area in the globe that you think, actually, that's a World Heritage Site? I really want to check out that before too long.
Well, I think there are three on my bucket list. Machu Picchu would be one. Secondly, the Great Barrier Reef would be another. And the Taj Mahal would be the third. And I think they're pretty common in people's top list. I've been very fortunate in my travel career to have been to some extraordinary places. But I have to say that it's very difficult to match the Great Wall of China and the Terracotta Warriors and Tiananmen Square and the Forbidden City. I mean, these are awe-inspiring destinations and venues. And when you look at them, you just think, my God, you know, I've heard so much about these places. And these places are all very, very accessible from the UK. And a lot of flights there, a lot of tours there. So it's very, very accessible indeed.
It's all good stuff. And who was I thinking you were going to say? The cathedral at Lincoln. But that's another line. And Dr. Li Jing, any sort of lines from yourself? Any areas in the world that you're keen to actually visit?
Yeah, I think also I will add on what Lawrence suggested, the Silk Road in China. Mm. I think, yeah, that was also the Chang'an Tianshan corridor of the Silk Road already being inscribed on the World Heritage List. I think that is particularly in the northwestern part of China, stretching to Central Asia. It's quite interesting cultural route.
Faraway places and wonderful names as well. Dr. Feng Jing, the Chief of Asia and the Pacific World Heritage Centre, and indeed travel expert Lawrence Hicks, many thanks indeed. I'm sure we'll speak again soon as the Year of the Rooster proceeds. Happy Chinese New Year to both of you.
And to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Crushing.
Saying thank you, being positive, and actually sort of being grateful, having the attitude of gratitude, all key aspects which are important when it comes to the human condition. But it seems that according to Sainsbury's Bank, over the past 12 months, over half, or almost half, of British folk have seen a decline in how much they are rewarded in one or more aspects of their lives, from gratitude and praise from friends and partners, through to rewards from banks or credit card providers. To address this, we're delighted to welcome two fine, superlative individuals. First of all, neuroscientist extraordinaire, the fantastic Dr. Jack Lewis. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
And the equally wonderful and extraordinarily talented head of banking at Sainsbury's Bank, that's Simon Ranson. How are you, Simon?
I'm very good, thank you.
Yes, excellent. Jack, if we can come to you first, I mean, we are, as human beings, we respond much more to positive words than to, you know, negatives, or indeed just possibly being ignored. Maybe that's even worse than sort of harsh comments, as of just being completely ignored.
I mean, the interesting thing is as well, which just as a complete aside, is that we also tend to filter stuff so that even when we do hear negatives, we interpret it positively. But the bit that I find most interesting about this survey commissioned by Sainsbury's Bank was that 7 in 10 are feeling like, you know, it's more important to be praised than get material rewards from, say, partners. It's 50% from their kids. And, you know, basically, positive feedback from other human beings is incredibly important to us, and we feel like it's on the wane a little bit.
So, Simon, in terms of Sainsbury's Bank, et cetera, is this something we think, you know, we cherish and care for each and every one of our customers and like them to know every single moment of the day that we love them?
Well, you know, we've done some
some work with MoneyCom that showed that there's only three credit cards in the last 12 months who've maintained a level of reward, and one of those is Sainsbury's Bank. And you know, and joking aside, you know, we do take rewarding our customers very, very seriously. And across all of our products, we do offer some form of reward in the form of Nectar points. So you'll earn Nectar points in Sainsbury's supermarkets, but then you'll earn more if you use a Sainsbury's credit card to pay for your shopping in that supermarket. So yes, we do take it very seriously.
And obviously the other sort of aspect is just reward for loyalty, because in a lot of cases, as you rightly said, you get to situations where, yeah, after 6 months or indeed, you know, a year or whatever, it's a case of, right, well, they're with us, we won't bother now, just leave them be, basically. We take them for granted.
That's spot on. You know, we've seen that... the research shows that 50% of people have seen a decline in the rewards over the last 12 months, and the majority of that decline is actually in the reward that you get from service providers such as banks or credit card companies. So 34% have seen a reduction in reward from their bank. And you know, what I'd encourage people to do is shop around. You know, there are providers out there who still offer really, really good rewards. So, you know, why not switch to those rather than staying with your current provider who doesn't love you quite so much?
Jack, when it comes to the human mind and so on, is it fair to say that actually taking time to either write a thank you note or to appreciate somebody and verbally sort of enthuse about them is slightly better than just doing a like and a thumbs up on Facebook?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. You know what? There was a recent World Health Organization study that showed that across the globe, one of the most important things to do with well-being, both physical and mental well-being, is feeling connected. So if you give someone a like on Facebook, how much does that sort of increase your sense of being socially connected? Not much at all. But to do something thoughtful for someone else, it's incredibly powerful at stimulating the reward pathways of the brain. Any kind of reward stimulates the reward pathways of the brain. But when it's a social reward, when it's a bit of positive feedback, and particularly when someone's gone out of their way, it's not you know, as easy as clicking a button to give that social reward. It has a tremendous effect on the brain in terms of making us feel happy, making us feel better connected to other human beings, and it's fundamental to our mental and physical well-being. As in, if we're feeling good psychologically, it has a positive impact on our health overall. Which is why the fact that so many Brits know that, you know, to be positively rewarded in terms of praise from the people around them, I think that's a really positive thing. Because if you know that that's the case, then you can start doing that for others. And then there's this other aspect of reciprocality. If you praise other people, if you're pleasant to other people, they'll be nice back to you again. And I think that, you know, we've noticed that rewards are on the wane across the country, and people, 42%...
Times of austerity, obviously, times of austerity.
Well, people want to do something about it. That's the important thing. So, as Simon said, shop around, find the people who reward you properly.
And that is certainly one of the key aspects. I mean, I must admit, I always get a nice thrill when I use my app and actually sort of find out how many Nectar points I've actually reached now. I think, oh, that's very good, as the little digits work our way around that. But Simon, listening to what Jack's been saying there, are there other strategies that Sainsbury's are maybe thinking about in terms of actually personalising the whole system, as opposed to obviously, you know, download the app and work through that point of view? Or is it a case of, you know, not only are you looking to hold the customers that you've got, but hopefully make sure that people who'd make that decision to change would actually switch possibly to Sainsbury's and so on?
Yeah, so, you know, all of our products have a Nectar reward element. So, you know, you collect...
We want more 5 points and more 3 points that are 3 times and 5 times. Those are the things that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can collect points on your Nectar credit card, collect points on your Nectar card just by shopping in Sainsbury's. And then when you redeem the points, there's lots of different ways you can do that. So you can use them against your shopping in Sainsbury's, or you can cash them in for other sort of treats and rewards that you can find on the Nectar website. So, you know, it's you know, we have a loyal shopper base who are very keen on collecting these points. I think there's a sort of an emotional connection with the Nectar scheme, and people see real value in it. And you know, as I said earlier, I'd encourage people to shop around. You know, if their current bank isn't rewarding them for their loyalty and for their custom, you know, look for providers like Sainsbury's who do appreciate the custom and reward customers for being with them.
And best place to go online to find out further details about what we've been talking about today would be?
So if you go to sainsburysbank.co.uk.
Splendid. Jack, I have to say, when we last spoke, I was so impressed with Sort Your Brain Out that I thought that was, you know, unbeatable. But to actually see that you've got Mice Who Sing for Sex coming up, it's outrageously wonderful. I mean, it's just, you know, it's tremendous. I mean, all you need is Mice Who Sing for Sex at Sainsbury's, and there's a whole new different line there. But I won't go there at this particular interview. It just would not be appropriate.
Just wait until... Just wait until science has been.
Good heavens. Dr. Jack Lewis, ace neuroscientist, and Simon Ranson, head of banking at Sainsbury's Bank. Many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon. Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you. Bye.
Through the hard times and the good, I have to celebrate you, baby. I have to praise you like I should.
Grocer magazine shows that you're selling an estimated 10,000 tonnes of your product globally and 1,800 tonnes in the UK per annum. You've got a special product to hand, and it's fair to say that the Manuka honey brand is indeed one of the top standards that's around. And in previous weeks, of course, we've looked at a whole range of authenticity when it comes to food labels, when it comes to a whole range of companies from Pharma Nord in Denmark onwards. But it seems that actually we're still being misled by food labels. And to address the challenging issue, in particular with respect to Manuka honey, we're delighted to be able to welcome a dynamic duo of fine folks. So first of all, science biochemist and head of the food quality and safety program, Dr. Adrian Charlton. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
And secondly, from indeed the unique Manuka Factor Honey Association, UMFA, the wonderful John Rawcliffe. How are you, John?
Good morning, sir.
John, if we can come to you first with respect to the Manuka Factor Honey Association, who are obviously responsible for this research. I mean, this is another challenge between New Zealand and Australia, isn't it, from looking at some of the mislabeling that's going on here?
I think there are two points here. One is an industry taking responsibility to ensure that the consumer, when they buy a product under a quality mark, is actually true to label. So we've heard all the press previously, and what we are saying is problem solved. We've used good science and international science that's credible to be able to say this is Manuka. So that's the first part of it. And the second part is, yes, our dear friends across the ditch have decided to rename from Tea Tree and Jelly Bush and call it Manuka,
I couldn't believe this when I saw this. So that's outrageous from that point of view. It's bad enough sort of mislinking accents, but, you know, changing honey styles as well is ridiculous. But the serious part, of course, as you rightly say, the Manuka Bush is native to New Zealand. It's the country of origin. We know when we're doing a lot of country shows and events and we deal with beekeepers that actually where the honey is actually produced is absolutely essential and important for obviously the quality and the sort of things that consumers are expecting.
Yes, I mean, it's you know, when you're lucky enough to have a whiskey or whatever on a Sunday evening, and it comes from this region, and you know the flavour, and you know the style, and you know the passion behind that it's come from Scotland, and particularly a journey or whatever. That's what you want. I mean, if someone wants to steal that and misrepresent that, that's for us a major concern for the consumer.
Adrian, looking from your own perspective, I mean, it seems as though every so often, whether it's horse meat coming into vegetarian meals and so on, and other sort of aspects, there are issues when it comes to actually labelling things. I mean, you know, is it that difficult to get it right?
I think the problem is that there's always somebody in the background when you're selling a premium product who wants to pass something that's a little bit cheaper off as the same premium product. So honest manufacturers will label their products correctly. It's a small minority of people who want to pass off product that isn't genuine.
And in terms of the science behind the whole process, presumably it's been relatively easy and straightforward to, in the case of Manuka honey, actually confirm that the contents that are contained in the jar that claims to be Manuka is actually genuine Manuka product.
Oh, there have been a number of challenges along the way, and there's been an awful lot of work, scientific work, that's gone into verifying Manuka honey. And I think we've got a very robust marker now, and the future looks great in terms of protecting the product.
And in terms of ensuring that consumers do get what they actually think they're buying, is it a case of ensuring that the label's actually there? What should they be actually looking for if they're going out after listening to this thinking, I want to have a jar of Manuka honey?
Well, we've been working obviously with UNFA, so they have a quality mark which is very clearly defined. I think the main thing for the consumer is to understand the labelling, so when there's a number on a jar of Manuka honey, to know what that really means, because the numbers do mean very different things depending on the brand that you're buying. And also some of the words that are used. So looking out for Manuka honey versus Manuka blend honey, they're very different things. And I think the average consumer wouldn't know that. So I also think there's a responsibility on the manufacturers to clarify what they're putting on the label. And that's part of what we've been doing with UNFA and with the general business in New Zealand.
John, clearly it's partly due to the Manuka honey that you have such wonderful rugby teams over there, all various other factors that could be involved with this. But you know, as you've seen this develop, I mean, is this something which is just problematic within the British market, or do you have other issues globally as well?
Well, I think food fraud globally it's an international issue, and you know, there's olive oil issues, there's a whole series of them. And I go back to the first principle we have here is that an industry is taking responsibility, ensuring under a quality mark that it's true to label, and there's a massive body of evidence that goes behind that mark. And that's our message. We need to take responsibility for what we've got, and we've done that. Others may need to take responsibility for their patch as well. But the UMF Honey Association, under its mark, has actually stood up, taken 5 years, invested a lot of money, has applied the best possible science behind it.
And returning to Adrian, in terms of obviously the ongoing science programme between UMFA and yourselves and so on with respect to how things are measured and developed from that point of view, do you see this as something which, you know, eventually we'll be able to say, yeah, we can trust all food labelling, it is authentic, we know that things are going to be working through, or is it going to be a consistent challenge?
I think the challenge is to stay one step ahead of the game. As we develop tests to detect fraud, then the fraudsters have sophisticated techniques of their own to develop new ways of tricking the testing. I think what we've done with Manuka honey in particular is take a very robust approach that future-proofs the testing and the product. So we've actually looked for a particular compound that is very difficult to add back into the honey. In many cases, you know, you can fool scientific tests by manipulating the composition of a food. In this case, that's going to be very difficult.
Would umf.org.nz be the best place to go to, or is there another website which you'd recommend people check out if they are, you know, concerned about, in this particular instance, obviously Manuka honey and the brand and so on?
There's an awful lot of information out there, and I wouldn't miss the opportunity to promote ferra.co.uk as well. But also, if it's specific to Manuka honey, then yes, the UMF Honey Association site is probably a good first port of call.
I think you've raised a number of very important points there. Even Winnie the Pooh probably wasn't equally as challenged when it actually came to actually sort of get his particular brand of honey. Probably actually needed to be checking out the Manuka brand. For the moment, though, Dr. Adrian Charlton and John Rawcliffe, many thanks indeed. Take care there.
Thank you.
Honey, honey, how you feel me? Honey, honey, near me.
Absolutely. ABBA and Honey Honey, what better way to come out of the Manuka Honey feature that we had this morning and across to hopefully some good news for the estimated 9 million sufferers of irritable bowel syndrome, which takes place in the form of a new scientific breakthrough which suggests that your own gut bacteria will dictate the severity of your IBS symptoms. To address this, we're delighted to welcome two fine folk to wrap up the morning piece today. Dr. Sean Preston, consultant gastroenterologist and leader in your field of digestive health, and Sanuba Patel, a lifestyle blogger who indeed has suffered from IBS as well. Good morning, folk. Sanuba, if we can come to your good self, because I've known a few folk who have been regrettably suffering from IBS, and it is one of those areas which can debilitate on every level, can't it?
It definitely can. I think a lot of people are quite embarrassed by talking about IBS, I think. A lot of the symptoms are quite humiliating in some ways, because for me, a lot of it was involving things like being quite bloated a lot of the time, feeling quite, even emotionally, feeling quite drained all the time. And I think a lot of the time people don't want to talk about things like that. They think that, you know, it's quite embarrassing to talk about things like having gas and constipation and things like that. So that's why I think a lot of the time people don't diagnose about IBS and they don't find out more about it.
Okay. Sean, in terms of this particular study, two key things that seem to make this aspect so exciting. It is the notion of we have good bacteria, but also we have bad bacteria, and we need to work out how those wonderful versions of bacteria can work with us as opposed to against us.
No, I think this is a really significant finding. And as you say, you know, it's the role of the gut bacteria. We are filled full of trillions and trillions of copies of bacteria, predominantly in our bowel. And this study has shown that a particular fingerprint, these types, these different families of bacteria, are overpopulated in our patients with severe irritable bowel syndrome. So down the line, this is going to give us an opportunity to identify those patients and more importantly, manipulate that bacteria so we can make our patients' symptoms better.
It does sound, I must admit, that our telephone line to your good cells in the studio seems to be suffering a little bit with irritable bowel syndrome, but I think we're getting the key points out from that perspective. I mean, Sanuba, this is good news from your own perspective, no doubt.
It's incredibly good news. I think there's so many probiotics and products out there to kind of tackle symptoms of IBS, but there aren't any, you know, to be honest, when I was I first started suffering with IBS about 2.5 years ago, and initially when I went to see my GP, it was put down to other things. So I just got married about 2 years ago, and, you know, a lot of it was down to things like being stressed and the excitement of the whole kind of the occasion. And so a lot of the time, you know, I was being told by my GP that, look, you know, once that kind of thing's calmed down and once your stress levels come down, you'll feel a lot better. But the symptoms were just not going away for me. And I tried a lot of probiotics kind of over the counter, you know, went to the pharmacy and tried to change my diet a little bit, you know, tried to become a lot healthier. But even then, my symptoms were persisting. And that's when I decided to kind of, I just thought, okay, look, you know, I can't get any better. I went back to my GP again. And, you know, I think, and I was getting really frustrated because they weren't coming back to me with a solution. And I think my energy levels were just so low. I was kind of feeling so tired all the time, and it started to become quite debilitating. And that's when I came across a new probiotic supplement called Alflorex. And I think that's what I found great about that was that it was targeting my specific IBS symptoms, and they helped me feel a lot better. But I'm sure Sean would be a lot better to explain the science behind it.
Absolutely. So we're just about to hang in. We have in the studio Ben Lewis. Ben, any questions
Morning.
That you've got?
Yeah, from the symptoms you've described, if anyone's listening who believes they may obviously follow some of these symptoms, what would be your recommendation to them?
Sure.
If I can take that one. Yes. Well, the main thing, firstly, is to talk to your GP. You know, Sanuga has expressed quite rightly patients' reluctance to come forward and discuss bowels. It's all I do all day, and I would encourage others to do the same. But to go and speak to your GP, to exclude other significant diseases like inflammatory bowel disease, celiac disease. But once the diagnosis of irritable bowel syndrome has been made, then to try and identify specific cures, not treatments for that, such as probiotics, dietary supplements that may help your symptoms further.
I must admit, when we were looking at the schedule, putting it together today, we did think about, yes, how much can we actually spend talking about irritable bowel syndrome from that point of view? It is one of those areas where, can people be, I mean, is it a case of actually overcoming that embarrassment, Sanuba, so we can actually address these things and say, look, you know, forget the embarrassment. This is something which, you know, if it's impinging on your overall quality of life, it's important to be addressing in topics such as this.
Of course, I would urge people to kind of try and get help for if they're suffering any of the symptoms of IBS. I think, you know, a lot of the research has shown now that IBS specifically, quite a lot of women suffer from it. And I think, you know, being a woman myself, I think it is incredibly embarrassing to talk about it. And, you know, it's embarrassing to talk to your friends about it. And, you know, a lot of my symptoms, things like bloating, you know, it was horrible. You know, I couldn't wear anything close-fitting. And, you know, I was quite worried that, you know, people would notice the fact that, you know, my stomach was sticking out and, you know, I was looking fat in some way. And I think getting over that embarrassment is a big step. I mean, I didn't actually go to the GP until suffering from it for almost a year. And that was only because that my symptoms had got so severe and I was just feeling so run down all the time. So I definitely urge people to seek some help.
And Sean, best place to go to, is there a website which you would suggest actually it's well worth checking this particular aspect out?
I think there's several. The CORE charity website is an excellent one. British Society of Gastroenterology and also the NHS website. All of them got wonderful advice for patients and also then sort of groups on from there.
And Sanuba, the lifestyle blogger address for your good self, let's give it a shameless plug, what is it?
www.sanuba.com.
Well, you see, the magic has worked because after a slightly concerned phone link at the start of it, we worked out to almost complete perfection. So not only has it sorted out irritable bowel syndrome, I think irritable phone syndrome has been addressed as well. So it's been genuinely wonderful touching base with yourself, Dr. Sean Preston, Sanuba Patel. Many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful people, you live in the same world as I do, but somehow I never noticed you before today. I'm ashamed to say, beautiful people, we share the same back door and it isn't right. We never met before, but then we may never meet again. If I weren't afraid you'd laugh at me, I would rot and take all of your hands in. I'd gather everyone together for a day, and when we're gathered, our past bottoms, our best say. Beautiful people.
And you are, and you are, and you are. Melanie, beautiful people there. It's brought us to the end of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Lincoln's First Community Radio Station, Siren FM, on this, the last Thursday in 2017 before Chinese New Year. Oh, thanks to Holly McGrattan and Ben Lewis in the studio. Ben, we made it through a programme which has got so many
just
people
about
in there.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Katie Carr, Denise Lewis, Jack Lewis, Kevin Pratt, Manuka Honey, Dr. Sean Preston, Sanuba Patel, and we've still forgotten various other folks. Right? We've focused on the whole thing.
Yes.
And so just back. Are you back again next week?
I shall be, yes.
That's splendid.
Hopefully with the win of Brighton in the back pocket.
Well, of course, there is that to talk about, you know, the whole, that'll be covered in full by a whole range of fine folk with respect to Siren as we proceed through the day. Great stuff coming, as ever, on Lincoln's First Community Radio Station. Do you know, we didn't even have a chance to really give the official acknowledgement for John Wenham, and it's literally just minutes to go. You know, you'd be listening there thinking, they haven't mentioned me at all.
Yes.
We haven't forgotten you, John. It was just, you know, and you've got irritable bowels on the one hand, you've got Manuka Honey on the other, you've got the Machu Picchu, you've got the Chinese New Year.
Just all good nutrition with Denise Lewis.
Indeed, and good nutrition with Denise Lewis. Just where do you go? So, I think it's a case of we go home. Say bye-bye, Ben.
Goodbye.
We asked what you want from your radio station. Siren FM. And you. you said, a better variety of music, local news and stories, presenters with something to say, local voices from across Lincoln. We heard what you wanted, so we said, come on then, let's give it a go. Siren 107.3 FM wants to hear from you. Just head to sirenonline.co.uk to find out how you can get involved. Siren FM wants you. So visit sirenonline.co.uk and be part of Lincoln's first community radio station.